If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Someone says, oh, there's a bed bug. It costs you money to fix the bed bug issue. If someone says, oh, there's a roof in a leak, you got to start fixing that. And any mold or anything like that, so it could be costly. Whereas this, you don't have much cons that I see because there's not much of that going on.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Jonathan is a CPA who began his real estate experience in 2003. He purchased a portfolio of residential real estate properties in New Jersey and later expanded to syndication, multifamily, and self-storage facilities. Jonathan and his team have acquired a portfolio of commercial real estate assets located in Oklahoma City, Atlanta, Georgia, Midway, Georgia, and Birmingham, Alabama. In addition to being a real estate investor, syndicator, and mentor, he also serves as head of tax for a leading IT software company. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Hey, the pleasure's mine. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to jump on. I know you're a CPA and you're head of tax for an IT software company. So I can't imagine that you guys are swamped right now.
Yes, we are. We're always in a busy mode. We're always in almost a closing year-end mode. Our company has a lot going on and it's a really hectic work schedule normally.
Wow. Yeah. Hats off to you guys, accounting and CPA. You know, what you guys do is above my pay grade and I oftentimes don't understand it. So, you know, thanks for putting in the hard work for the rest of us. You know, the flow of the show here is where'd you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there? And I'd love to hear that perspective from you really on the investment side of things, because that is a very different thing than maybe a day job being a head of tax for a software company. So can you kind of walk us through that?
Sure. My journey began in really 2003 when I did residential real estate. Growing up in New Jersey, I bought like a couple of condos, which is sort of like a small portfolio. And I liked real estate. I read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, which inspired, you know, millions of people. And I was one of them. And I was very serious, had a passion for real estate. And the more I learned about taxes and the code section, I got more wiser and much more savvy in the doing planning and structuring. And, you know, when you get older and older and you study this and you do this for a day, you understand what's the logic and premise behind taxes. And I started looking at that real estate and I said, oh, there's a great way to offset your income if you understand the tax code and how Uncle Sam works. Once you understand the keys of how Uncle Sam works and the intricacies of the policies written by Congress and the Treasury Department, you understand how America works and what's the system of taxation and how the wealthy makes money and how you save taxes. So I decided to go more into real estate because that's the only really the benefit of America is to give you a lot of breaks and benefits via cost segregation, depreciation, also being a real estate professional. You can offset all the losses with your active income, which is pretty amazing because, you know, most people don't get that benefit. So what I did was I hired a mentor to help me get my journey in multifamily. And it was, you know, well worth it. And I started syndicating multifamily and also help other partners, you know, do other aspects like due diligence, you know, marketing, raising capital. And so we acquired like maybe something like 300, 400 units together. And we went with Full Circle within like 2 years on one of them. So that was a success story. I have a couple of them in my portfolio and I might be planning to sell one of them as well. So that's probably another second one to go full circle. And I also invested in diversifying my asset because I realized that even though while multifamily is a decent asset, it's not the best asset in my view. And there's some things in multifamily that over time, when you realize, when you get into the game, you realize that it's a lot more things to consider. And there's other asset classes, which I'd rather lean towards too than just multifamily to diversify my basket, right? Don't keep all your eggs in one basket, what they say as a financial advisor. So I've been doing that in the past 1 year after COVID-19 hit us, and it's doing well. It's faring very well. And I'm pretty happy. So I'm going to go more toward probably, I don't mind multifamily as my core base, but I'm going to go into other asset classes to diversify and increase my holdings and my wealth through commercial real estate, basically.
Did you say, because you mentioned, you said multifamily you didn't see as being the best asset. Did you say which asset class it is that you're going into? Maybe I missed that.
Yeah. So the asset class we're referring to is industrials asset class. It could be warehouse, it could be self-storage, it could be along those in like industrials, warehouses. So that's where I'm kind of leaning toward my focus as well this year as well.
Gotcha. That's really interesting. So what year was it that you bought your first multifamily property?
This was with my first property was in Atlanta, Georgia. I assisted one of my partners getting her first deal. Together, we closed on a 34-unit, sort of a Class B townhome style in Atlanta, Georgia. And we recently sold that like maybe a month ago. And that's less than like around 2 years time frame or less.
Okay. So sometime early 2019, maybe till now. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, that's just good timing. Not to mention so 2 year full cycle, and you got another deal you're looking to sell as well. Transitioning to self storage or industrial, have you made that leap yet, or is that still on the?
No, ever since the pandemic hit last year, I jumped on the bandwagon. Mm. I spent a significant amount of time educating myself with my partner, who I one of the mentors nationally. He's very he's very well known and known for self storage. And together we went on a mission to Missouri. We spent 3 months, 4 months, doing due diligence and learning everything he taught me. He was a kind of like my mentor in a way. And I learned so much. I got so much. I'm able to syndicate now self-storage. And we closed on a 90 unit in Midway, Georgia. And we also closed, my partner closed on the one I helped him lead, which is in Columbia, Missouri, like 188 units. So over 120 units. And now I have a deal I'm working through in Texas, which is kind of like an RV boat storage item right now.
Right. Yeah. RV and boat storage. That's a hot commodity right now.
Yeah.
If anybody's paying attention, I don't remember what the stats were for 2020 on the nose, but it was something like a 30% year over year increase in delivery in RVs.
Yes.
And I think I read that 2021 has had another 10 or 15% increase even over 2020 in the first quarter.
Yeah.
So yes. People are going to need to have places to put those boats and RVs. So that's going to be, that's going to be, especially in places like Columbia, Missouri, which is, recreation central.
Yes.
So that's really fascinating. What have been some of the problems or some of the challenges that you've run into once you acquire these assets in managing them?
So that's a great question. When you do your due diligence, you have to make sure, especially in multifamily, where it requires a significant amount of good property management. You need to make sure you have a good property manager. You see eye to eye, and they're honest to you, and they're transparent. Because a lot of them are not transparent. Either they do something that's not up to your expectations. So that could be an issue. That could be a big issue. And then another one you see is that you have to make sure that your base, when you take over, so what happens is during transition, you have to make sure that you do this very carefully so that you have the tenants being there and the keys being there, and also being able to turn around the difficult period. Because what happens is that a lot of times when you take over, they skip town. They're not there no more. They're just like, zoom, they're gone. And they leave everything behind, like your couch and food and everything. It's very sloppy. And that's what kind of tenants you're in. You're a Class C in those kind of neighborhoods. So if you're in a Class C investor, you're going to have those kind of buildings like that, where people don't care. And they could skip town with them tomorrow and not tell you. You just got to do an occupancy check. So that's what I realized in Class C. That is challenging because one day they're there, one day they're not, and your occupancy could fluctuate. So you need to stabilize that and get good tenants in. And that takes some time because it's not easy to quickly turn everything around that fast.
Right. Especially not in a Class C asset. I mean, there's typically more cleanup. There's typically more reconstruction and or the turnover expense, turn and make ready expense is going to be higher. So that's really interesting. How about on the self-storage side of things? Have there been any challenges on the management side of that? I mean, because those are not, 500-unit properties, so bringing in an outside manager might not make the most sense. How have you chosen to manage those, and what's that look like?
No, those are mostly mainly self-management. I have a part-time facility manager, but you don't need no full-time property manager and pay him like a salary. You don't need that for a 800. You don't need that because it's self-storage meant to you. Self-storage, you do it yourself.
Understood.
And you don't need a part-time person in case anything happens to, fix something or clean, do something you need them to do. So their expense ratio is lower. And that's why I enjoy industrials and that kind of area, because it's a lower expense ratio. And there's things that I can do, more opportunities I can do that I like. Whereas multifamily is kind of like black and white sometimes. Oh, you upgrade a vanity, make a backsplash, you do the floors, you know. It's just pretty cookie cutter. Like, you know, you update the interior units. Maybe you put a gazebo up, maybe you put a little dog park. That's normally what you see when you see value add, right? Maybe fix the exterior, and that's kind of like a very normal traditional class C and value add. But in industrial, you can do something a little more creative, right? You can do stuff like put cell phone tower. If there's a contract there, you can think of ways how to increase it by maybe building more or having, portable storage, or even making it gravel or pave it, make it look nicer, have climate control. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, there's many things you can do. Rent out as parking space for venues, you know, make it a boat storage, or make it, you know, there's many you can do that can increase revenue. You just got to be a little creative, you know. So even your billboard, you can rent the billboard sign up there, you know, and lease it out, you know. So for advertising.
Right. Yeah. Those are a lot of income streams that people don't think about that you just mentioned there. I like where your head's at on that. So you've started buying self-storage and, you know, you said those are fairly easy to manage. And now you're looking at a boat and RV storage facility, you said, in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. What does that look like for you? And talk to us about that opportunity and maybe without giving details, but why do you like it?
Oh, I like it because RV is in demand. The city ordinance, when you look at city ordinance, most time the HOA don't allow you to have a boat in front of your house or RV. So they must put it somewhere. So the place is the storage, right? It's kind of storage where we have a 24-hour surveillance. We have electronic gate, so it's secure. And we have a dump station, and we have electricity hookup. So they like that. And that's kind of like a man cave. They can go out there, they can fix something and the tools a little bit, and that's fine. We let them fix small things here and there. So that's kind of, they go out there, you know, get the stuff, may fix or hinder. And what I like about it is there's not much maintenance. It's just a parking space, you know. We have a little cover on top, and there's really not much compared to multifamily. You know, you don't need to change a carpet or anything. There's no carpet there. So that's what I like about it. It could be more automated. It could be more streamlined. And you know, people need a place to park their boats and toys. And that's a perfect place for us to, you know, for a business model.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What are some challenges or some things that you see are cons to investing in storage or boat and RV storage or industrial?
I see very little cons, to be honest with you. I don't see much cons. I see more cons in multifamily than in industrials. Definitely multifamily, you have a lot of cons. I can sense that. You know, you have to have a property manager, pay him a lot of payroll. That's a big expense. Someone says, oh, there's a bed bug. It costs you money to fix the bed bug issue. If someone said, oh, there's a roof in a leak, you got to start fixing that, and any mold or anything like that. So it could be costly. Whereas this, you don't have much cons that I see because there's not much of that going on. And to be honest with you, a lot of these boat and RV will not mess around because it's a $100,000 toy you're talking about. So who would not pay the rent if you have collateral of the boat? You see what I'm saying? Like, so I don't think, you know, that's why I think it's more secure in that sense. Whereas a tenant, a class C tenant could move tomorrow, right? In my case, I had a nice elder lady. She passed away, which is sad. So she was paying on time for a couple of years. Now she's passed away. She's not here no more. So I lost the tenant. Another old lady went to the nursing home. So I lost two tenants recently. And I didn't expect that. Those are the cons, you know, that's what I was saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you bring up the pro on the storage. You're right. I mean, $100,000 is any more. I mean, I own a boat in order to keep up with the prices of them. But I've anecdotally heard through other people that own them, like the price of boats is just skyrocketing. And a $100,000 boat is not that hard to come by anymore, let alone a $100,000 recreational vehicle or like a motorhome or something else. I mean, those get expensive fast. So who's not going to pay their note or pay their storage?
The rent.
Yeah, the rent on that. You know, when they stand that item to lose, that's really, really fascinating. How has this been for you investing in cash producing or income producing assets while at the same time working a W-2 job and working alongside other people maybe that have not developed that? Has that been some interesting conversations at work?
I tend to just talk to only people who I'm very close to at work. And so it's been interesting. It's been good. I had one of my former staff invest with me as a passive investor. So it's really nice. They believe in you and they want to support you. I'm the head, so that's why they believe in me, because I'm the vision of the department. And, you know, they want to support me, so it's nice. And I support them. I try to get them good returns. So if I sell this deal this year, I'm going to give them back very good returns within 2 years or less. And I'm sure they'll be very happy.
Right. Man, that's fantastic. Good for you. Good for you. Hey, I've certainly enjoyed this conversation, Jonathan. I love what you're investing in and love where your head's at and what you're doing there. That's certainly commendable. Let's jump here into the final four. The first question is this. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
I'll say just have the passion and a commitment and just focus and work hard and you will get there.
I love it. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Each year I go to like these seminars and networking events so I could keep learning and listen to podcasts and just go to events, network, and you know, meet people and also listen to the experts. So always keep current and be in the loop, basically.
Right. That's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Oh, I like to donate money to charity. I like to help other younger people, to mentor them and give them inspiration. So, I know you want to be an aspiring syndicator like me. Don't worry, I can help you. And if you want me to lead a deal, I can help you lead a deal. So stuff like that, I try to help them, give them the honest opinion so they don't hurt themselves. I see a lot of young people, they're eager for a deal, but they don't know.
Right.
And you can get hurt if you don't know what you're looking at, right?
Right.
It could be a bad deal, basically.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. That's spot on. Jonathan, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Sure. They can either email info@graystonecapgroup.com or I'll go to my website and there's a contact button in there as well.
Great. We'll put the link in the show notes, graystonecapgroup.com. Jonathan, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.